The path to becoming a writer is not always a straight one. Catherine Benetto, author of How Not to Fall in Love, Actually, and two more novels, shares her story on how she became a writer. Catherine, great talking to you again. Thank you for being on this podcast. My first question to you is, did you do in life what you studied for?
No, because after school, I went to university and did biology. No, but I didn't finish the degree. I really loved biology and loved learning about it, but I realized that it wasn't a career that I wanted out of that. I was just interested in how the body worked. So I pulled out and got a job on TV.
Wow. And how did that jump come, like from biology to TV? Did you have an opportunity on TV or?
No, I went to Australia to get some perspective on what I wanted. And I accidentally walked onto a film set where I think they'd done The Matrix or something like that. And there was all these props. And then my dad got a job on Fox Studios and he took me in. And I remember seeing the Titanic car, you know, where Leonardo DiCaprio and Kate Winslet have sex in the back of the car. And I was like, oh my God, it's the real car. And I just had this feeling that I really wanted to work in film and TV. So I left Australia, went home and just started making phone calls and worked for free for a bit until I could get enough experience to apply for jobs, and then got the lowest job you could possibly get on a New Zealand soap, which was runner.
Can you tell us briefly what a runner does?
They do anything. They just run around, really. So my job at that particular one was I had a car and I was told to go into town and pick up tapes and bring back tapes. Go into town and pick up stationery, bring it back. Take this actor from this place to this place. You are literally running around. If you need cheese, you run out and get cheese. And I worked from 8 till 8. And I think I had never worked that hard in my life. But it was pretty cool. You got to spend a lot of time in the car, listen to music, and then you just work your way up from there.
Okay, and then you became an assistant director.
Yes, so I think I went from runner to third AD, and that was just, it's almost the same job, but you know, instead of doing it outside the building, you're doing it on set. So can you get this actor? Can you get this? Can you go and tell this person? So go and get the extras. And so I did that for, I think, a year, and then moved up to second AD, and I did that, I don't know how long, 10 years maybe? But not on the same show, all over the place. We went to England and I worked on The Bill and Coronation Street, doing the same job there. And I met my husband, who's a first AD.
Oh, that's so, how you met Ed.
Yeah, we worked together for years. He was supposed to be my boss, but actually we all know it was me.
Of course.
I'm still his boss.
And so, because of course many don't know, from a third AD to second AD and first AD, they're completely different jobs. So you must have had a lot of broad experience in that sector.
Yeah, because the third AD is on set, right there involved. And then the second AD is completely offset, pretty much sitting in an office doing all the paperwork and all the organization. And if you're on a big set, then you're at a unit base, not in the office, and you're coordinating everything from there. And then the first AD, which is a job that I've sort of put my toe in and really hated, is on set and in charge, and everybody comes to you. So lots of yelling. I don't like that job at all.
By then, were you already developing your passion as a writer?
Yes, I think on some level I have always been scribbling away, because I think I wrote my first book when I was about 9, 10. Okay. And it was like about this magic locket and a talking tiger and something like that. And then I wrote a love story about Lady, but I didn't know how to say Penelope. I thought it was Pennylope. It was Lady Pennylope. And I still remember that romantic story. And then I just have been tinkering away, but it wasn't until I was in, I think I was living in England, when lots of little stories that I'd, or little scenarios I'd sort of jotted down, started to form themselves into a story. And we were on a 6-month trip around Asia and Europe and India and all over the place, when I suddenly realized that all these little things were a story, and I started writing it then. But it took me, that particular book, when I realized that it was a book, I'd say about 8 years, because I had children and I moved countries, and I just, you know, I'd put it aside and wouldn't touch it for maybe even a year. And then I'd pick it back up and go, oh, that's right, I was writing a book. So it took a long time, but that one is actually published. It's my first book.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic. And so tell us a little bit about your books. You know, how do you find the stories? What attracts you in a story?
I think what I've noticed that I really like is family. And I didn't set out to write about family. I just have, that's just the dynamics between people who care so much about each other, but also have the ability to turn around and tell you exactly what they think of you, is a dynamic that I've realized that I keep writing about. So my first book is, they're all romantic comedies, although my third book that I've just handed in has a little bit more drama. But yeah, definitely they're romantic comedies, more comedy than romance, and it's always central as a family sort of conflict going on.
Okay. And so you were talking about, you handed in your third book, and so how do you find publisher for your books?
Well, the way that I did it, and I honestly think there's so many different ways to do it. You can go online and you can read about how do you get a publishing deal. But the way that I did it was I wrote my book first, and then I did an online writer's course that a London agency, literary agency, was putting on, which meant that I think I was in South Africa and New Zealand at the time, which meant I could go to this course wherever I was. And that was absolutely brilliant. And at the end of that, I had a much more published novel, and because it was an agency, they asked for first reading, and they did, and I got representation with them, and then they go and find you a publisher. The other way of doing it is to just write a book and approach a publisher. It's far less likely that you get a deal that way. You generally need to get an agent, and then you basically just send out three chapters to as many agents as you possibly can with a really nice cover letter saying hello, and introducing yourself, and you just wait. Friends of mine who were on that course, which was in 2013, have been looking for book publishers and agents, and one of them only just got one now. So what, I don't know, maths. I can't do maths, but that's a while ago, 2013 to now.
Yeah.
You know, so writing, that's the one thing I learned when I started getting into this world, is so slow. It moves so slow. And people think that getting a movie off the ground takes a long time, but I found TV worked a lot faster. And then suddenly you're writing books, and it's, you know, I remember I got my agent, and I don't think I got a publisher and got the book out for over a year. So wow. It's very slow. Yeah.
And in terms of how long it takes you to write the book, what would you say? How long did it take you to write the first one, for instance?
Well, if I take from the moment that I realized that I was writing a book to the moment it was published, it's probably 10 years. But the next book was written in 8 months. And then this last book was written over, so I broke my shoulder so badly I couldn't even type. So that got delayed, and then COVID's delayed it another year. So this last book, I think, has been 3 years between being my last published one and this one being published. So it's, I would say, when I can sit down and write a book with no broken shoulders, about a year. That's generally how long you're given from the publishers anyway, which is a long time, you think. Like, it's to one book and you spend a year on it. But that's because once you've handed it in, you think, oh, I'm done. It comes back to you with all these edits, and then it goes back to them. It goes back and forth so many times with all these different edits and copy edits. And, oh, you have to change this because that character that you talked about, that real person in real life died, or, you know, you can't write this anymore because something happened in the news. And there's lots of changes that happen.
Okay. So is there creative control being taken from your desk, let's say? Does the publisher have some rights on the content of your book?
It's very much, so my experience so far has been suggestions, and they're really good about it. They don't say you have to do this. They've come up with suggestions, and there's been the odd one where I go, absolutely no way, I really like that. And they generally will be, okay, fine. Other ones you go, oh yes, that's a great idea. So no, I don't think creative control has been taken much in the actual content inside the book. But interestingly, I had no idea, but you've got no control over your cover or your title. So I know. I was really shocked. I think when you're a bigger, you know, like Marion Keyes or, you know, really famous novelists would have control, absolute control probably. But I didn't at all, because I'm just a little new starting out one. So my cover, my title, not mine. So this last book I handed in, I didn't even give a title because I'm like, well, you'll come up with it anyway. So there you go. And I think they do that because they've got marketing teams. So they're the ones marketing it, knowing where it sits on the shelf. It's all. And the other thing I found really weird is, because my books are published with a UK publisher, is that Sainsbury's, you know Sainsbury's,
the market,
they had control over my first book's cover. They got to put their like 2 cents worth in, because they're the big buyers. So they said, okay, well, there's a pink border. It's only about a border, but they wanted the pink border on, and I didn't want the pink border, but Sainsbury's overruled me. So they got a pink border.
Mm-hmm. How about that? And how about the general topic? Do you find a publisher based on the theme of your book, or is it the other way around? How does it work?
So I don't choose the publisher. I don't have any control on that. I chose my agent, who I'd sent my manuscript to, based on what they represent. So my agent represented women's contemporary fiction. If she was somebody who did historical sagas, then I wouldn't be silly to send it to her, or sci-fi or something. So you have to make sure that when you're sending it to agents, you're sending it to ones that actually represent your genre. And then she knows, so all publishers pretty much publish everything. So I'm with Simon & Schuster, they publish all sorts of things, but she has to pick the editor that it goes to. So when she was pitching it, she picked the editor that was doing women's contemporary fiction or romantic comedy, and that's why. But that's not up to me. She does all that.
Okay. You know, there's a lot of talk about writer's block. Now, have you had a writer's block, or do you know somebody?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes, all the time, every day. Yeah, mainly for me, it's when you are doing the first draft, where you're sitting there with a blank page and you are making decisions, and you've got a 360 choice of what to do with your book and your character. You can do anything. And that, when you haven't got framework, it's really hard to go, oh, well, I could make them this, or I could make them that, or I could make it a boy, or I could make it a girl, I could make them die, I could make them live. You can do anything. And when you've got, it's like sitting there with Netflix and you've got a million choices and you're like, oh, I can't watch anything. So that is when I find that I end up going and deciding to clean out a cupboard from top to bottom, and like I spring clean the whole house when I'm in that stage, which is the beginning. I just go and do anything. I decide that I want to learn how to bake a baked Alaska, which is a 6-hour cake. Anything. So, but then once you've got your framework and you've written that first draft down, that it just gets easier and easier. And I don't usually get writer's block then, because your characters are formed in your head. You know what, it's almost like you know what they would do. You know how most people have watched Friends, and you can throw any scenario at those characters and know how Phoebe will react or how Monica would react, because you know their characters really, really well. That's sort of how it is once you've written your first draft. I remember my agent, my publisher on my first book, I'd written that book and it had been in my head for years. And she said, just before we were about to publish, she said, you know, it'd be really great if we could see the family at Christmas time. And I wrote a whole chapter in like a couple of days, and it's my favorite chapter of the book now, because I knew exactly how every single character would react on a Christmas day. Whereas if I'd been at the beginning of the book, that would have taken me, could even a month, easy.
Do you start from the beginning of the book, or do you start from like the middle, or you first start writing down the characters, like how they are, yeah. A, B, C?
I think what I've got is usually a plot first. So I get an idea of what I want to happen to who, the main character. And I usually like to know the beginning, how it starts and how it ends. And then I do a character study. So I'll sit there, and I forget where I got it from. I think it was some guy called Nathan Bransford or something. He's got this really good questions you should ask your character. And I sit there with each character and I ask those questions, go, okay, well, they wake up in their house. What is the first thing they do? What is the first thing they see? And you start to go, oh, yeah, they wake up in a shitty flat, or, oh, they wake up in this penthouse apartment. You get a real sense of that character. And I do that for most of the main characters. And then I put it aside. You never look at it again. It's just, but it helps you form that character. But I only do that once I know what story I want to tell, which is, you know, where you start and where you end up. Everything in the middle is the hard work.
Yes. Do you ever change the end from when you started? Did it happen in the three books?
No, I think because for me, I know what I'm aiming for. And so when I start on it, I know what the result is, because otherwise I don't think I could start if I didn't really know what the end was. So I have never changed the ending. Having said that, a friend of mine who's a crime writer, she wrote her whole book, handed it over to her publishers, and her editor made her change who the murderer was. So that's a massive change. She had to change, like, and so she definitely got her end of her book changed. But no, I've never had anything as drastic as that.
That must be frustrating.
I can't imagine. Yeah. Because it's not just going, okay, instead of Michael, it was Frank. You have to, everything from right from the beginning, you have to undo. No, never done that.
What would be, according to you, the hardest time of your career as a writer and the most fun moments?
The hardest moment, I think when my second book came out, they didn't get it into supermarkets or anywhere. Like the first book got into all the supermarkets and got translated into a few languages. And then the second book came out and they just, nothing much happened with it. And I'd worked really hard on it. It got printed and all that and got into shops, but it didn't go into any supermarket. So it just sort of faded away within a few months. And it's still being bought now. Apparently on audio, it's really popular, which is like 2-3 years down the track is it's actually still being bought, which is really good. But at the time, I was really disappointed. And I got a phone call from that editor and she said, oh, your third book isn't going to go into print because we didn't get your second book in anywhere. Your third book is only going to be ebook. And I just felt like I was sort of being, instead of starting on a high and I got a 3-book deal and it was all, you know, translated into, and it just felt like it was going downwards instead of upwards. And I think I got a bit blue about that. But then since then, I've had different editors. So I've had 4 editors between my 3-book contracts. So they come and go really quickly and they really make a huge difference. So the next editor that came along managed to get my second book into supermarkets and wanted to relaunch it and put a new cover on it. And I suddenly got a bit more happier, I guess, and reinvested in writing, whereas I'd sort of lost my joy of it because it felt like it was on a downwards spiral. And so this book now I've handed in and I've got another new editor and she's all really excited. And so I'm back to being excited. So I think my lowest point was when it was just sort of between editors and nothing much was happening. And I felt like I'd worked really hard. I wonder what the best bit is. Oh, I think I've been offered, people have asked to buy the rights to make the first one into a movie and a TV series, but my agency didn't sell the rights. And then most recently, I've just been asked to write a movie, which I think I start tomorrow.
Wow.
And that's been a bit of a highlight. So that's off the back of the books. A friend of mine is a producer and she's approached this UK production company and said, look at her books. And if you like them, can she write your movie? And they've just come back and said, yes. So that's been a bit exciting.
Very exciting. Congratulations. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Screenwriting. Well, that's completely different.
I know.
Style, right?
I know. The only thing that I said to my friend, I've never written a script. Are you crazy? But she said, it's the same. You know, if you know how to create a story arc and create tension and pace, then you can apply book writing to movie writing. And I was like, sure. Okay. If you believe in me, I can do it.
That's fantastic. Yeah, I look forward to knowing the rest of the story. Now, for someone who is listening to this and says, oh yeah, but I want to be a writer, but what does it take? And like, am I going to be able to earn my living from writing? And how long will it take? And what do I do in between? What would you suggest that they start?
What I didn't realize is that when you're in novel writing, you're in it for the long haul. It's really the very top 2-5% who make enough money to quit their job and live off being a writer. So I would suggest basically anybody can write a book. You just get in there and write a book. That's the biggest thing, is finishing your first draft and actually writing it. Loads of people think you've got to go and approach other people and start approaching agents before you've written the book, or no, just sit there and write the book. And then you can approach an agent, but I would say you do it on the side of your job for years. And just keep plugging it away. You've got to love it. And you've got to not look at it as I'm going to go and write a book. And when I sell it, I'm going to quit my job and just, you know, hang out at home in my pajamas with my dog. But no, no, only the 5% people can do that. And I do love it. So I love creating stories. And I'm fortunate enough that most of the time when I was in television, I was able to find little bits of time where I could sit there and, you know, you get up at 5 a.m. to go and put somebody in makeup and then you don't have to do anything until 7. So you can quickly, you know, sit there drinking coffee, making sure they're sitting in makeup and write your book. So just find the time, do it around your work and just keep going. Get to the end and hand it in to somebody, send it off to an agent.
Okay. And agents. So do you think you were lucky to find an agent? Or because, for instance, if I think of film production, which is, you know, I'm more familiar with the film world, it is really hard as an actor to find an agent, or even as a screenwriter to find an agent. How difficult is it to find an agent as a writer, as a novel writer?
It's really hard, but I got one straight away. But that was that. I think I had a massive advantage by doing the writer's course, because the writer's course was run by an agency. So, you know, we were being, our tutor was one of their current authors. The head of that sort of online school was an agent, and they all sit there and they talk to each other. So they knew what books were there. We were also the first online school. So after that, they've now been running it for 7-8 years. But so it was all very exciting, I think, to have these authors that were all around the world writing their books during this course. So I actually, the first agent I sent it to said yes, but that's really unusual, I think, because some of my friends who were on that course, as I said, one of them only just got an agent and her book published. Another friend of mine has been through two agents. She writes brilliant books, but the first agent got nowhere with the book, and so she had to leave them and get another one. And that's actually happened to two people that I know. So it can be a bumpy road, but I didn't have any bumps. I think I was very, very lucky, and that course made a massive difference.
Yeah, okay, that's a good advice to give, yeah. And I'm sure that you're also talented.
Modest. But that course is still running, if anybody, I mean, I thought it was brilliant. It's Curtis Brown Creative Writing Course. You can be in Mongolia and do that course. It's really brilliant.
Oh, wow, fantastic. Then maybe I can put the link on the podcast text in the description.
Yeah. They've even moved into children's book courses and all sorts. So you know, they've really grown. They've got a lot to offer.
Oh, that's fantastic. Yeah. If I were not a lost case as a writer, I would.
You are not.
I actually found the screenwriting, because I wrote two screenplays, and I found that much easier, because you don't have to describe in 10 pages what happens in a paragraph in a screenplay.
Yeah.
So yeah, so that I found much easier for me, because I'm not a writer for sure.
But, and did you use Final Draft?
I did use Final Draft, yes. Oh, it's so much easier with Final Draft. It does help a lot. With the tempo as well. Yeah. Yes. No, that's for sure. And also, I remember I was reading some power screenwriting. There was a book about this. So I wrote notes about this power screenwriting. And it was really helpful, because it gives you an idea of what, you know, how the blocks that you build when you write a screenplay, which is not the same as a novel. And so that was very helpful for me too. There's kind of like a formula that always works in films. Sometimes too much, like, and then you know when it's a Hollywood movie, it exactly follows that pattern.
I think isn't it like by page 20 something, rather, this has to happen.
And yeah, 30. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the inciting incident. Yeah, exactly.
You know, I actually have that formula roughly at the beginning of every book that I write as well, because you do sort of need to have a certain pace and hit certain things.
Yeah.
But if you get too bogged down in formula, you forget to just write your story.
Yes, I agree with you. I've certainly fallen in love with your storytelling, Catherine, not just in your books, but in this interview. So thank you very much. And thanks to you who have listened to my podcast. Drop me a line for any comment or suggestion at jobtalespodcast@gmail.com. I'm looking for interesting people to interview and for up-and-coming musicians to promote them on my intro and outro jingle. This is Laura. Bye for now.